A bombardier sits naked in a tree during a funeral. A dead man's belongings haunt a tent, impossible to remove because he never officially existed. A soldier wrapped entirely in bandages may or may not be hollow inside. Welcome to the world of Catch-22, where the only way to prove you're crazy enough to stop flying combat missions is to demonstrate you're sane enough to keep flying them. Joseph Heller's masterpiece doesn't just tell a war story, it exposes the machinery of madness that grinds up human beings while calling itself rational. The novel gave us a term now woven into everyday language, describing those impossible situations where the rules themselves trap you. Needing experience to get a job that would give you experience, requiring insurance to afford treatment that would qualify you for insurance. But beneath its dark comedy lies a devastating question. What happens when the system designed to protect you becomes the thing you need protection from? The rule is elegantly simple. Any pilot requesting grounding for insanity must be sane, because only a sane person fears deadly missions. Anyone truly insane would happily keep flying. There's no escape, because the escape route itself is the trap. What makes this paradox brilliantly terrifying is that Catch-22 doesn't exist as written regulation. Characters cite it with absolute authority, but nobody can produce the document. It's a phantom rule with real power, enforced through collective belief rather than legal text. This fictional regulation expands to justify every absurdity. Why can't you see the commander? Catch-22. Why must you keep flying? Catch-22. Heller's genius lies in showing how arbitrary rules, once accepted, become unquestionable. Colonel Cathcart keeps raising required missions, from 25 to 30, 40, 50, eventually 80, always just beyond Yossarian's reach. This moving target creates psychological torture more effective than physical threat. The novel populates itself with characters embodying different responses to systemic madness. Cathcart volunteers his men for extra missions to impress superiors, treating human lives as ledger entries. Major, 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 cursed with a name that became his rank through IBM error, adopts a policy of never being available when people want to see him. Yossarian isn't brave or cowardly, he's rational in an irrational world. When Clevenger argues the enemy shoots at everyone, Yossarian cuts through the absurdity. What difference does that make? His survival strategies, faking liver conditions, moving bomb lines on maps, appearing naked at ceremonies, aren't madness, but recognition that the Emperor has no clothes and will kill you for noticing. What separates Yossarian from selfishness is genuine compassion. Near the novel's end, the Snowden incident is fully revealed. After Flack hits their plane, Yossarian treats Snowden's visible thigh wound, believing he saved him. But when Snowden whispers, "I'm cold," Yossarian discovers Flack has torn through his side, spilling organs into the plane. This reveals Snowden's secret. Beneath all stories about meaning, we're fragile biology that stops working. Confronted with Snowden's literal insides, Yossarian sees past patriotic abstractions to mortality's brutal physics, not cynicism, but terrible clarity. In Yossarian's tent lives the ghost of Mud, a soldier who died before completing his paperwork, so officially he never existed. His belongings remain because you can't remove possessions of someone who was never there. When new roommates finally dispose of Mud's things as unwanted clutter, the casual erasure terrifies Yossarian more than the original death. The system's ultimate power isn't just killing you, it's erasing you so completely that your death doesn't even count. The soldier in white appears completely wrapped in bandages, with tubes recycling fluids in a closed loop. Dunbar suggests he might be hollow inside, like a chocolate soldier, triggering ward-wide panic. The patient has no voice, no face, no identity beyond medical processing. Doc Danica gets declared officially dead despite walking around alive because paperwork says he was aboard a crashed plane. The military won't correct the error because admitting mistakes proves more impossible than accepting a living dead man. Each character represents the tyranny of paperwork over reality, the system's refusal to acknowledge its own errors. Milo Minderbinder transforms from mess officer to international syndicate operator whose M&M Enterprises, where everybody has a share, trades across the Mediterranean with anyone, regardless of allegiance. His business logic divorces completely from morality or patriotism. When he contracts with Germans to bomb his own squadron, he justifies it as good business. The Germans are syndicate members too, and profit benefits everyone. Heller satirizes capitalism within warfare. Milo buys eggs for 7 cents, sells for 5, yet profits through elaborate shell companies. After cornering the Egyptian cotton market, he approaches Yossarian during Snowden's funeral to taste chocolate-covered cotton. Milo's effectiveness stems from complete sincerity. He genuinely believes profit equals patriotism, seeing no contradiction between serving his country and doing business with its enemies. His declaration that what's good for M&M Enterprises is good for the country parodies corporate logic equating private profit with public good. Together with Colonel Cathcart's careerism, these characters create a gallery of madness that feels less like exaggeration than documentary, revealing how unchecked capitalism and institutional self-interest devour human welfare. The novel's darkest chapter sends Yossarian through nightmare Rome, searching for Natalie's prostitute and her kid sister. He encounters brutal scenes: a convulsing soldier mocked by onlookers, men beating dogs and children, teeth scattered on pavement, police violently seizing civilians. This hellish journey culminates when Yossarian discovers that Arfi, the affable navigator, has raped and murdered the maid Michaela, throwing her body from a window. Arfi remains smugly confident. "They can't arrest me for that." When police arrive, they arrest Yossarian for being in Rome without a pass, completely ignoring the murder. This selective enforcement exemplifies bureaucratic absurdity elevated above human life. Institutions meant to protect citizens instead become arbitrary enforcers of meaningless regulations, while actual crimes go unpunished. This isn't incompetence. It's the system working exactly as designed, prioritizing its own rules over human lives. Yossarian faces three choices: accept Cathcart and Korn's corrupt deal, continue flying deadly missions, or desert. His decision crystallizes when he learns Orr, his tentmate, thought dead, had been planning escape to Sweden all along, deliberately practicing crash landings. This revelation transforms despair into hope. Yossarian's desertion becomes moral choice, not mere self-preservation. His declaration of responsibilities to reach Sweden and save Natalie's whore's kid sister shows maintained humanity. Even the chaplain and Major Danby find courage to resist from within, suggesting multiple valid paths of resistance. Yossarian's final leap, narrowly missing Natalie's whore's knife, represents commitment to life despite its dangers. When Danby warns his conscience will never rest, Yossarian responds, "God bless it. I wouldn't want to live without strong misgivings." Moral discomfort beats comfortable complicity. In embracing uncertainty, Yossarian paradoxically finds the freedom military certainty denied him. His escape isn't victory, but refusal. Refusal to let the system define his worth or claim his life. In a world of bureaucratic absurdity, the question isn't whether systems will trap us, they will, but whether we'll maintain our capacity to see the madness and choose to jump anyway, strong misgivings and all, toward whatever uncertain freedom waits.